This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana Friday Politics. And we're pleased to have our listening audience at WWNO joining the WRKF audience now on Fridays. And we always look for contributions from the most enlightened audience at radio. And if you're so inclined, give us a call at 877-217-5757. Emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Today's the 17th day of March, 2023. Happy St. Patrick's Day. And with us to talk about one of the revered Louisiana politicos and arguably the most renowned writer about Louisiana politics of all time is Jeremy Alford. John McGinnis was born on this date in 1948. He would have been 75, difficult to believe. It's been nearly 9 years since he died, but he left an indelible mark, and Jeremy has taken the flame, and he is now following in John's footsteps, and wherever John is, I'm sure he's quite pleased with Jeremy's work because it is significant, and he remains a major player when we go to somebody and ask for insight on Louisiana politics. Today also, by the way, before we get to Jeremy, is the birthday of another famous Baton Rougean, and I hate to say it, but even more famous than John McGinnis. This is one of the city's daughters, born on this date in 1979, March 17th, 1979. I was in college. I remember it was a Saturday. I remember Magoo's was having a big St. Patrick's Day party on Chime Street. I remember DePaul beat UCLA in the NCAA tournament, but I did not know at that time that it was going to be a marker for a person who would make Baton Rouge famous or infamous in a way. Today is the birthday of one Stormy Daniels. And Stormy Daniels, the porn star who had a relationship with the former president, Donald Trump, is now the focus of a court proceeding in New York City, and the district attorney there, Alvin Bragg, may very well indict Donald Trump on hush payments made to Stormy Daniels, $130,000. This relationship, which was brief, occurred when Mr. Trump had become a father for the last time. His son Barron was born 4 months prior, and he was cavorting with Miss Daniels, according to her story. And you'd have to think she has some credence because he did pay $130,000 to keep her quiet, and it's whether or not there was a campaign contribution and a campaign finance expenditure. That's the focus of this. And remember, John Edwards, the Democratic nominee for vice president in 2004, had a similar problem, and a jury hung in his case. But we'll see what happens with the former president. But if he's indicted on Stormy Daniels' birthday, that would be somehow poetic justice for her. And she might even sing Happy Birthday, Mr. President. Jeremy Alford, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I am doing well. But both of us were affected immensely, you more than I, but anybody who ever met John McGinnis knew he was a solid guy, but independent of that, an amazing talent, and he lasted for a generation in journalism, and the only thing working harder than working for somebody else in journalism is working for yourself. And he did it, and at times I know he was fighting to stay alive in the business, but he did it, and through all the challenges, he rose above it and wrote some of the most beautiful accounts of Louisiana politics, not only in his columns for Gris-Gris and La Politics, but also some books that will last long after you and I are able to come on the radio. The Last Hayride, 1983 campaign, Cross to Bear, 1991. You knew him well, and I'm sure you think of him every day, Jeremy.
I do. I miss John a great deal, especially right now, because we are celebrating our 30th anniversary this year, La Politics Weekly and LouisianaTracker.com. They have been in print for 3 decades as of this year, and you know, we talk a lot about John and how he could turn a phrase or how he could read a race. But, John was an innovator. And you know, 30 years ago, after publishing a number of magazines and publishing books, John realized that, as funny as it sounds right now, that the fax machine could, in some small way, replace the printing press. And for folks who don't know, I publish a number of publications that John McGinnis created. It's kind of a political tip sheet. It's evolved into a trade publication for elected officials, lobbyists, anyone who spends money or makes money on Louisiana politics. And, you know, he published that by fax. And I still love hearing from longtime subscribers about how everybody would gather around the fax machine and wait for the copy to come. Of course, now today we are delivering by email. We're working on SMS and text delivery in the future. And this political publication has become a proper trade publication, just like plumbers and attorneys subscribe to publications to help them do their business. Political professionals look to La Politics Weekly to do the same.
John James McGinnis died in 2014, so he not only missed the Trump years, and he would have, of course, written in ways no one else could or would about the former president, but he also missed the 2015 campaign. Jeremy didn't miss it, and he and Tyler Bridges put together a book that I'm sure John would approve. It was an exceptional book about a campaign for the ages, and it was Long Shot, in which John Bel Edwards, I wouldn't say came out of nowhere, but he was certainly not the favorite. But he ended up winning not by a scant margin. He won by a landslide. He beat David Vitter 56-44%, and he ran 17 points ahead of David Vitter in the primary. Now, that, of course, gives Sean Wilson some hope that he can repeat history. But this time it's different. It always is, and the field may change a bit. I suspect in this case more of candidates getting out than getting in. But how do you see it 30 weeks out, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, it's an incredibly different race than what we saw 4 years ago, where you had a self-funded candidate in Eddie Rasponi and only one other Republican in the race with Ralph Abraham. Now you've got so many Republicans in this race, including two headliners and Stephen Wagensbeck and Jeff Landry, that we could end up seeing a sort of civil war divide the Republican Party as we know it right now. Even on the congressional delegation, you can see the possibility of a divide with Stephen Wagensbeck being friendly with both Congressman Garrett Graves and Congresswoman Julia Letlow, and then Congressman Mike Johnson and Clay Higgins certainly have the ear of Jeff Landry and vice versa. The donor class is divided. There are problems at the Republican mm-hmm. Party. Even on the religious right, amongst pastors, that they have choices this cycle. They're all friendly with Jeff Landry, but they have a choice in Hunter Lundy, who is an independent trial lawyer who's making up some real ground with Pentecostals. And I spent some time speaking with the pastors this week about it, and they're aware of that. And they're waiting for an appeal from Stephen Wagensbeck. And it's interesting that I'm hearing some concern from pastors that they don't want a big business stamp on state government at the cost of family. So, you can already see this debate between Jeff Landry and Wagensbeck shaping up on the right and wondering what these other candidates are going to do. And it's, look, each governor's election is like a snowflake, right? It's a unique event. And some of the learning lessons we're learning already is that the field doesn't have to be set in December. And that, you know, I don't think we've seen a race so stacked on the Republican side like this before.
877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. John Bel Edwards on his Ask the Governor show 2 days ago, on both WWNO and WRKF. He talked about Stephen Wagensbeck being an impediment to an increase in minimum wage. And in Arkansas, it's $11. In Louisiana, it's $7.25. So somebody working in a McDonald's in Eudora, Arkansas, would make $4.40 a week, and probably in Lake Providence, 20 miles away, if there is still a McDonald's. I know there's one in Tallulah, not so far from there. But at any rate, it'd be $2.90 a week. So that's $150 a week, $7,800 a year. It is a huge difference. And Stephen Wagensbeck, according to the governor, is the reason why we still have a minimum wage at $7.25.
Yeah, I absolutely buy that. And the governor, you know, has always made this a case of doing the right thing, that a higher minimum wage is the right thing to do. And look, there is polling out there that shows this could be an incredibly strong issue in the governor's race. This could be a good issue for one of the Republicans that are running. And you know, last year, I believe it was Senator Sharon Hewitt who said during a panel discussion that maybe it's time for Republicans to take another look at this issue. So, you know, I'm looking for folks like her to maybe step up on this issue and make it kind of a conversation point in this race for governor.
Would Landry dare go there?
I don't know. You know, I think one of the lessons from 8 years ago is that whoever makes it to the runoff will have to be able to speak to the middle. That doesn't mean you have to change your positions to be kind of a catch-all for voters, but we're starting to see Jeff Landry do that already. I mean, I have heard him in speeches twice now talk about his bipartisan, quote, voting record coming out of Congress. I think he even said it was one of the most bipartisan voting records coming out. And, you know, that made me laugh, too, and I think it made a lot of longtime observers laugh. But, you know, you have to find a way to do that, and it's starting already.
877-217-5757, your number. Back in 90 seconds with more on Talk Louisiana with Jeremy Alford. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and we're pleased to have for our Friday politics presentation not only the great listening audience at WRKF in Baton Rouge, but WWNO in New Orleans, the two perhaps most prominent talk stations in Louisiana. And, of course, they've got a big one in New Orleans at WWL, but that's a commercial station. And the NPR affiliate in New Orleans is WWNO, and it has been large and in charge at 89.9 for over 50 years now. And we're so honored to be with you. And again, 877-217-5757. Bill Huey writes of John McGinnis, who would have been 75 today and was the mentor of Jeremy Alford. I went to school with John from first grade through high school. He was an innovator. One of the best innovations was to publish a Dubious Achievements Awards issue when he was editor of the Daily Reveille. It was modeled on the Esquire Dubious Achievements annual issue, and it was wickedly funny. And he was a funny guy. And Jeremy, in addition to everything else, he was a patriot. Most members of his generation didn't stay around for Vietnam. They found ways to avoid service, whether with fake asthma or fake bone spurs, you name it. But John McGinnis, he served his country, and I think in his 66 years, he led a life that we should all emulate.
It was. He went to Catholic high school in Baton Rouge, just like I did. And when he got back from his military service, he became a correspondent for the Catholic Commentator, which he always found some humor in, because John, of course, knew his way around courtrooms as much as he did barrooms. So starting out, the Catholic Commentator was always
we used to muse about it. He started with a Catholic Commentator, and I started doing news and sports for Brother Jimmy Swaggart, and both of us were not averse to nocturnal pursuits. But John James McGinnis, I love this guy, and I still think of him, and it's amazing how often I do think of him, because it's also remarkable that he's been gone for 9 years. And Sue Lincoln of WRKF, when he passed away, did a nice radio obituary for him. Here's a sample of that. I think Robin Dow's got it ready.
It was just a couple of months ago that John McGinnis appeared on WRKF's The Jim Inkster Show, talking about Governor Bobby Jindal's presidential aspirations.
Outside Louisiana, there's just no serious talk about Jindal being a serious contender, but I think he's still a viable vice presidential contender, a running mate.
McGinnis, longtime political reporter and the driving force behind the lawpolitics.com website, passed away unexpectedly Sunday at the age of 66. McGinnis authored three books on Louisiana politics, two of which focused on Edwin Edwards' gubernatorial campaigns.
John McGinnis covered Edwin Edwards and everybody else in Louisiana over the last four decades, and I think he ranks as the standard for all of us.
LSU journalism professor Bob Mann agrees with Jim Angster's assessment of McGinnis as the role model for political reporters.
He never grew cynical about the political system. He loved it. He wanted it to work. And I think he saw what he was doing as helping that system that he cared about.
Governor Bobby Jindal issued a statement on the passing of McGinnis, saying, quote, "For decades, John captured our unique style of politics, and in turn, his work helped shape the debate of where Louisiana should be going in the future. It's safe to say he is the historian on Louisiana politics."
And he passed the flame to a good one in Jeremy Alford, and Jeremy's only 45 years old, and I'd say he's got a chance to be at the top of his game like John for at least another 20 years and perhaps more. And I would say that John made a good choice. And he commented on that before he passed. He did know he was in bad shape. I don't think he knew he was going to die so quickly. But
that's right.
But he was very proud of you, Jeremy.
That's nice of you to say. Hearing his voice was a nice treat this morning.
Yep. And he would be reporting, as are others today, about a development in Louisiana politics independent of the governor's election. Francis Thompson, the longest-serving Louisiana legislator, has switched parties. He's had an epiphany. He's now a Republican. Imagine that. What's going on, Jeremy Alford?
Look, you just there's so much here to unpack, and I co-wrote a book published by LSU Press last year called "The Party Is Over." You can get it on Amazon, and my entire chapter of the book is on the history, modern history of the legislature, and it's told through the eyes of Francis Thompson. It's called "Tracking Francis," and you know if you want to understand the historic trends that led to Francis Thompson switching, read the chapter in that book, and it brings the Republicans to a supermajority, but just what a colorful character. You cannot find an older populist Democrat in the legislature than a Francis Thompson. And over time, he evolved to match what the legislature looks like. And I had to laugh, Jim, a couple months ago, there was an event where Francis Thompson said of Insurance Commissioner Jim Donlin, Jim Donlin said that Francis had been there long before he was there. And Francis piped up and said, "And I'll be here long after you're gone."
Well, that's
and
true.
Of course, yeah, that's right. Jim Donlin is not running for re-election, and Francis is now a Republican.
Well, Francis corrected me once. I thought he and Ilario came in at the same time, but actually Francis came in a special election, so he was a little bit behind John Ilario. But Ilario's gone, and as we know, on June 1st, he will wed the beautiful 44-year-old Trina Edwards. But Francis Thompson now, with Foster Campbell being term limited as a public service commissioner, and he will have to leave office in 3.5 more years. If he wins a House seat and stays alive, I guess he'll be the longest serving Louisiana political official of all time.
That's correct. And that's, you know, I think he's the kind of person who couldn't do anything else. I think when Francis finally goes out and we all say goodbye to Francis, he'll probably be in elected office still. But just what a character. I mean, this is a guy who said he can never support a deal that he's not a part of. And he's just a part of yesteryear that's still around the Capitol. And I think everyone just enjoys visiting with him.
I mentioned Trina Edwards, soon to be Ilario. She has become a household word in this household name in the state, and she married former Governor Edwin Washington Edwards in 2013, shortly after he left prison. I think actually it was 2012. And John Ilario was his best friend, doggedly loyal to the former governor, was with him through thick and thin. I remember him being on the stage with Edwin Edwards when he conceded defeat in 1987. And well, who would have thought this scenario? And wouldn't John McGinnis have loved it?
He would have, you know. And John was certainly someone who believed in that the heart wants what the heart wants. And I would have to second that emotion. I couldn't be happier for both of them. But he would have loved that story for sure.
And as we look ahead, 30 weeks out, you think all these candidates will stay in, or will some of them pull back?
I think we could see a couple of the lesser known Republicans pull back, but you know it seems like most of the bigger names are dug in, and it's going to be a fight between now and then.
In a conversation with the current governor the other day, he commented that it was almost a daily venture for him that he had to see who was possibly going to run as a Democrat. And first there was talk of Tony Clayton and then of Mitch Landrieu. And then ultimately he had the field cleared and he got 40% of the votes in the primary. And you got to think if Sean Wilson has the field cleared, he may not get 40, but he probably will get enough to run ahead of the pack. So that just leaves one spot for a Republican. And many of us thought that the play for for Stephen Wagespack would be to get in a runoff with Jeff Landry, but with this field, that may not be possible, Jeremy.
Yeah, there were a lot of Democrats who attempted to run. Rick Gallo, former state senator, now president of Grambling, was another, but it was different 8 years ago. Folks, there were people who didn't want John Bel Edwards in a runoff, and so there's a lot of attempts at election engineering. You know, this around when I'm watching, Jim, is the far right of the field, particularly Hunter Lundy, who's visiting these churches, who's part of a group, National Christian Association of Lawmakers, whose members preach a Judeo-Christian form of government. You know, I'm interested to see how Hunter Lundy does to the right of Jeff Landry. You know, it remains to be seen if he can peel any votes off of him. But, you know, if someone like a Stephen Wagespack or a John Schroeder wants to slip in through the middle, that could be a way. If Hunter Lundy takes off and brings this message to far-right voters.
Well, thank you, Jeremy Alford. We'll be calling again soon, the publisher of La Politics and The Tracker. He's on top of everything Louisiana politics, and this is Friday Politics, and we'll be back after this brief timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Friday Politics on WRKF and WWNO, and Roy Fletcher, the esteemed political consultant, been around for a few years, and back in the year of 1995, he ran Mike Foster's campaign. And then Senator Foster emerged from the pack and ended up getting in a runoff with Cleo Fields, and the rest is history. He served as our governor for two consecutive terms, and now we're 30 weeks out, and we'll see what happens. And it is curious, Roy Fletcher, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim.
877-217-5757, your number, and talk at talklouisiana.org. Lots of emails today, so if you'd like to call, we'll put you ahead of the pack. But did you know Jeff Landry was a law school classmate at Southern University with Mike Foster?
I did not.
He was.
I had no clue.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's a little known fact that only Jim Inkster would know.
Only because Jeff Landry told me he transferred to Loyola, so that's where his degree emanates. But
He started at Southern,
and he was in the same classes with one Governor Mike Foster, who went to law school as a governor. And not many governors could pull that off, but your guy did.
No, he was something else.
He was.
What can I say?
As you know, he was a character, and people loved him. And he won two elections by huge margins, but he got candidates who at that time were not likely to win, and they didn't, and he won by huge margins over both Cleo Fields and Bill Jefferson. But Mike Foster is long gone. There are only two living Louisiana governors now, and Bobby Jindal and John Bel Edwards. Amazing that there are just two left. Many have died within the last few years.
And yeah, it was a murderer's row there for a little while. It was terrible.
But this
Buddy
year,
and Mike.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Buddy and Mike dying almost within a couple of years.
And Kathleen Blanco and Edwin Edwards.
Right.
They all went.
That's right. All died.
Within a few years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right now we have a race in which Sean Wilson, who's only run once as a candidate and lost for the Lafayette City Council in 2008. We got Stephen Wagespack, who's never run. And we got Jeff Landry, who's 3-2. He lost his first race to Troy Hebert for the state legislature. Then he won a congressional seat. Then he lost to Charles Bustani. And now he's won twice for attorney general. Who's the favorite right now?
I guess that Landry would be the favorite right now. I think that Sean is... I think that he's kind of in the posture of perhaps Bill Jefferson, Cleo, and that kind of so if he makes the runoff, the odds are he gets beat. But I don't think the Democrats are going to give that up easily. I think they're going to put on a real fight here because I think they think that he can win, that Sean Wilson can win. Yeah.
Well, he would be like John Bel Edwards, to some extent, with a wounded Republican, if it's Landry, but how wounded will Jeff Landry be? We don't know. And to my knowledge, there's nothing quite as exotic in his past as there was with Senator Vitter.
I concur with you completely. The analogy to Vitter, I just don't think, when you look at it, it just don't hold up. And so I think it's, I think that you have to give him the odds right now. I believe that the issue of Stephen Wagensback has raised an interesting issue. And the question is, and that's sort of the way it's being looked at, I think maybe probably a little bit wrongly, but it's the way it's looked at, is can somebody come up the middle? And there was a hope that Garrett Graves would be able to do that, and when he didn't, Wagensback stepped into the shoes, and that's the issue. Can he come up the middle, and can he get enough of sort of the suburban and the young and the bright people's vote to mm-hmm. win the election? That's kind of the pitter patter of it. I don't think that's absolutely correct, but it's the pitter patter of it. And so it's a real interesting question he's raised.
Well, before you arrived this morning, Jeremy Alford was with us, and he said it would be curious to see if some of the Republicans might go to the middle on issues. For example, one or more might suddenly back a minimum wage increase, something that Stephen Wagensback takes pride in, that as head of LABI, he kept it at $7.25 for a decade. But the question for Wagensback, a listener asks, and this is a good one from Hal in Monroe, is he going to, for example, is he going to challenge Jeff Landry on his stand regarding libraries, or is he going to basically parrot what Jeff Landry is saying?
That's a fundamental question there, because the question is not just about libraries. The question is, where does Stephen Wagensback stand on social issues? And that's the real issue there is the real question is, where does he stand on those things? So does he make himself somewhat different than Landry and use that as a tool to kind of move to the center or be in the center? Or does he parrot? My guess is he's going to find a way to distinguish himself from Landry. It may be over abortion, rape, incest, and the life of the mother. I don't know. But the point of it is that I think that he will try to find his ways to distinguish himself on social issues. Because that's his mm-hmm. If there's a base for Stephen Wagensback, that would be sort of his base. The person who asked the question about the libraries is exactly somebody that he would want to go and capture as a vote.
Well, it was on his show a month ago that John Bel Edwards gave his take on the library issue, and I think Robin's pulled it up. Robin Dow?
And the governance of libraries appears to be a hot-button issue. There are already two or three bills to regulate boards. Your view on that, Governor?
Well, I mean, I have never had anyone tell me in Louisiana that there was a problem with the way that our libraries work, either libraries that function as part of school or libraries that function, you know, just public libraries out in the community. It seems to me that this is an effort that's more about politics than about real problems. I'm interested to see what all the bills are that get filed and read through them and reserve the right to do whatever's required with whatever actually hits my desk.
All right. And as you can hear, if Governor Edwards is making decisions on these bills, all the candidates for governor will certainly be inclined to chime in.
They'll have to chime in, yes. And Landry's already pretty well staked out his position on it.
Right. And as a Republican, I think Stephen Wagensback, at some risk, tries running to the left of Jeff Landry.
I think that's the question, Jim, and it always gets back to that question is that what's the risk and what's the benefit, and is there a pathway? Now, I mean, just based on the polling that I've looked at and seen, I would say that the pathway is very, very narrow, sort of like, you know, the Lord said, you know, it's a narrow path, but it does exist. The question is, how well would the other candidate, particularly for Jeff Landry, Where does he make an effort to pick up some of that center vote? And can he be successful at it? And that puts pressure on Wagner's pack and so on and so forth. The point is that there is a small pathway, but there is a pathway. I would not count on it, and I wouldn't bet on it right now.
James in Metairie. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, good morning, Jim. Good morning to your guests. You know, leave it to the radical right-wing conservatives in Louisiana to accuse that our libraries have turned into dirty bookstores and porn shops. Unbelievable. So good to hear you, Jim, on WWNO on my Bose Wave system, too, by the way, instead of the speaker on my laptop. You know, Donald Trump's reckless claims about the 2020 election was stolen from him. That's going to be interesting, especially in Georgia. But out in California, these pillow men, Mike Lindell is not sleeping. He has infested the Shasta County Board of Supervisors. They've even canceled their contract with Dominion Voting Systems. And as a Louisiana connection, apparently some hard-right conservatives are planning, they're planning on introducing some type of resolution in the legislature.
All right. And there is an opponent to Kyle Ardoin, who has gotten high marks for his job as Secretary of State. And mind you, this is a state that Donald Trump won by 400,000 votes twice. But yet there are those who say those Dominion machines are being toyed with, and that Trump would have won by a million if it hadn't there had not been voter fraud in Louisiana. And Ardoin now has drawn another opponent in addition to one of the fringe candidates. He's gotten Mike Francis, who of course, is former chair of the Louisiana Republican Party. What do you think?
Yeah, and Mike's a good candidate.
And he's a public service commissioner. He has an office. He is a strong candidate.
Yes, he is. And but far, I'll just say this for him. I mean, but far, he went through some personal problems in the campaign. I believe that he ran against Jay Darden. He was actually up in the polls near the end of that race. So Mike Francis is a serious statewide candidate, very serious. Mm-hmm. And he's going to give, you know, and I heard that this morning. When I was waiting for the call from you, and I was listening to you, and that popped up that he had announced. And yeah, he's a serious candidate. He's very serious. And I don't know if it's about, I don't know if it's about vote machines or what, but what he said was it was about the clerk's court not being able to deal with Ardoin, and Ardoin said that's, he's trying to cause a rift, and I don't want to repeat all of it, but the point of it is that Francis could easily invoke vote machines and that sort of thing, because that's the wing of the party he comes from.
877-217-5757, another quarter hour to go of Talk Louisiana Friday Politics on WWNO and our flagship WRKF. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Roy Fletcher, who's handled campaigns far and wide, he was on the John McCain team back in the day, and he's done some work recently. I think you were in Georgia in that Senate race, weren't you, Roy?
A little bit, yes, sir.
Yeah?
Yep.
And then Timmy Teeple was the guy running Herschel Walker's campaign.
Any chance
that he's going to be running Wagosbach's campaign, considering they were so closely tied with the Jindal administration?
Here's what I would answer to that. I don't know what they're going to do. You know, who knows? But the problem with that is, obviously, if Wagosbach has an issue, one of them is Bobby Jindal. And if you put Wagosbach and Teeple together, it looks like Bobby Jindal 3.0. You know what I'm saying?
3.0, okay.
Yeah, 3.0. Yeah, I mean, I upped it one.
All right.
I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. I have no idea what. Stephen, I haven't spoke to him or anything right. like that, so I have no idea what he's doing.
877-217-5757. We'll go back to the phone lines in just a moment. But the 2003 race was one that was interesting, and that was the one in which Blanco beat Jindal. But the 95 race, even though it was not close in the runoff, we had Mike Foster, who was a state senator, Cleo Fields, state senator. We had Buddy Romer, former governor.
No,
former
congressman, I believe. Well, he was a
congressman at that time. You are correct. Yeah. When he ran, he was a congressman. You're correct.
I can't believe I got the correct.
You did. He was a senator, and then he lost his congressional seat. But anyway, we had.
Yes.
So yeah, we had two people of accomplishment. Then we had Romer. We had Landrieu, who was the treasurer. We had.
Yeah, it was a heavy field.
We had Melinda Schwegman, who was the lieutenant governor.
Right.
So why didn't any comparable heavyweights get in this time? The most notable office is that of attorney general. And when's the last time we elected an attorney general governor is what Tracy at the Capitol asks. We almost did with Richard Ayoub, but that was 2003, and he got squeezed by Buddy Leach, your guy.
That's exactly right.
And he missed the runoff, yeah.
That's correct. So that's been a question I've asked 100 times over the last year is, why doesn't anybody want to be governor? I remember a time when police jurors woke up in the morning and go, I could be governor, you know. I mean, that was a real ambition in Louisiana. Suddenly, over the last few years, it has not become an ambition. And I don't really have an explanation for it, except maybe it's just a damn tough job and nobody wants it.
Well, I think a lot of people want it. They just don't want to have to work to get it. And they know.
Well, they don't have to go through it. They don't want to have to go through what they have to go through.
I think I'll give him credit. Jeff Landrieu has built this aura that he takes no prisoners. I really don't think, I may be wrong, but I don't think he's any more sinister than most politicians
Absolutely not. I think that what's happened is you've got a guy that's very intense, who wants to be governor, that it means something to him, and because it's because we don't have that in several different places in this race, it's odd, and I don't think that's the way he is at all. I mean, my sense of it is that he just wants to be governor, and he's intense about it, and he's no different than any other politician when it comes to that. And he's just in a vacuum.
877-217-5757, your Talk Louisiana Friday politics number. Patrick in Innisfil Estates in Baton Rouge. Patrick, please be concise. You're on the air with Roy.
Yeah, I just kind of want to make a comment. You know, I've supported Bitter when he ran, and then to see, you know, he made the primary, and then they vote for, like, the Republican voters didn't, that, you know, were for Darden or for whoever else. They wouldn't Angel. Support Bitter when he made Angel. You know, he wouldn't support Bitter. And then I was for Rasponi, and Rasponi made the runoff. And then, you know, had the other guy made the runoff, I would have supported him. But it seems like it's just frustrating as Republicans.
Well, and Patrick, part of that is the attacks that these people launch against each other. And Roy Fletcher knows about Scott Angel. He was his political consultant. Angel did not endorse John Bel Edwards, but he also notably did not endorse David Vitter because he'd had it with Vitter.
That's what
could happen this time.
That is what the Democrats are counting on. Now, I want to go back to the question that he raised because it's a fascinating question. I think it shows you, and this is important. I think it shows you that there is a middle. There is a group of people, the Republicans, who were not satisfied with either person that got into the runoff, and not just candidate-wise. I think it was more cultural and political and that sort of thing. That I don't believe that much in this. Okay, I'm not that right wing. That's basically what I just said. I'm not that right wing, and so I'm more moderate. So that's why I think that's one of the reasons why there is a problem for the Republicans on that. That may give Stephen Wagensbeck a little hope. That's all I'm saying, a little hope.
Why didn't Graves get in the race?
That's interesting. I don't know. Just simple observation is that he's probably got a pretty good gig going on now in the House of Representatives. So why should he? Jim, it kind of puts it, which one would you rather be, governor or that? Well, Kennedy made a decision like that too, didn't he?
Yeah, but he's a U.S. senator, and Graves is one of 435.
That's right. I agree with that.
Chair of a subcommittee, and that I don't think that kept him from running for governor. I think it's exactly what we're talking about. He didn't want any part of Jeff Landry.
Probably so.
And Wagasback, he has not run for office. He's not cast votes. Now he's been head of LABI. So he doesn't have a paper trail that a lot of these others do, and so he will be presumably a little harder to get to, but I would imagine Landry and the others, if Wagasback gets traction, they'll be coming after him with earnest, Roy.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about that. That's politics. And frankly, they should. It's a harder road for Stephen Wagasback even to build that middle. It's a harder road for him when it all gets laid out, and that's why I would say that if you got a bet, you bet on Jeff Landry right now if you want to put some early money on it. I know we're talking down there in New Orleans, so we might help some people.
Well, presumably there will be debates, and it will be quite curious to see how they play out with Wilson and Landry and Wagasback and perhaps Richard Nelson.
Yes.
There's a guy who's a very good candidate. He just doesn't have a lot of resources, but
he's a good candidate. He's young and he doesn't have a lot of resources. And given the nature of the state right now, I think people are kind of looking for a change agent. That's what he's interested about. He talks some stuff.
And Jeremy, before we came on, said he thought Hunter Lundy is getting some traction with evangelicals, and that could push him as an alternative to Landry.
I was going to say, that's the key. That whatever he gets comes off of Landry. And that, again, that's a calculation that Wagasback and those guys have to make. That's interesting.
Robin says we should try to take a call or two, and she's right. She's running the show. And we do ask in our remaining moments, which are short, if you could keep your remarks related to Louisiana politics, that would be nice. David in Atlanta, you're on with Roy. Hi, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. When President Clinton raised the minimum wage $1 an hour over a two-year period, unemployment went down every year. And I will strongly submit the boom in the economy after the Trump tax cuts wasn't so much due to the Trump tax cuts, but due to two-thirds of the state raising the minimum wage.
All right. Well, minimum wage is $11 in Arkansas with a governor that's about as conservative as they get in Sarah Sanders, and she will make no effort to change that. Why is $7.25 so sacrosanct in Louisiana?
Sacrosanct?
Yeah.
I have no idea, and it makes, it kind of just doesn't make a whole lot of sense in some ways. Now, for small businesses, it does. But it's not even in the, it should be higher minimum wage should be absolutely considered in this state and probably should be done. I mean, it makes no sense because I can tell you this, I know. There's over 80% of the people in this state say that you can't earn enough income in Louisiana to live a middle-class life. I mean, much less a poor middle-class life. So, yeah, it's serious.
Well, $7.25 is $15,080 a year, and that's if you work 40 hours a week.
That's nothing.
And you go across the border. You go across the border, and it's almost $23,000 a year for minimum wage. So
yeah, but I can tell you that you know, I know that hospitals and people and institutions like that struggle like hell to get people at $18 an hour. I mean, so I don't know. It's kind of crazy.
Well, we have good employment.
We have a weird labor market.
Well, thank you, Roy.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks for listening to Friday Politics on WWNO, WRKF, signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting.